We're doing Ein Yaakov on Shabbos. We're up to the 10th chapter. We learned last week about a person who says, I hereby take a vow to donate metal to the temple. So the Gemara had said he should give at least an amma by an amma, an arm's length by an arm's length. The Gemara asked, what do you do with that?
Pigeons.
Chalya orev. You could put it on top of the Beit HaMikdash, on top of the walls. You add sharp metal that the pigeons wouldn't be able to land on top of the walls. So Tosfos had asked that this was only necessary in the second Beit HaMikdash and not the first Beit HaMikdash. Tosfos had quoted that there's an ancient work called the Aruch. There was a rabbi called Rabbi Natan who lived before Rashi, and he wrote that in the first Beit HaMikdash they didn't need a Kalya Orev. They didn't need that. The first Beit HaMikdash was so holy, the pigeons wouldn't land on it.
Even after you show they hit the ark?
Seems that way. Tosfos asked, the Gemara in Tractate Moed Katan asks, why didn't Shlomo delay the conclusion of the Beit HaMikdash? Why didn't he just have it on Sukkot? Combine the two celebrations. So the Gemara says, well, you couldn't do that because how could you delay the building of the Beit HaMikdash? The Gemara says he could have finished the Beit HaMikdash and not built the Kalya Orev. So then he's finished the Beit HaMikdash and he still has to add that top slither of metal that will prevent the birds from landing on it. And then he would do that just before Sukkot and celebrate on Sukkot. He didn't do that. He finished everything before Sukkot and had 7 days of celebration before Sukkot and then the 7 days of Sukkot. So from that Gemara, says Tosfos, we see that the first Beit HaMikdash had a Kalya Orev. It did have that piece of metal. So why did the Aruch write that the first Beit HaMikdash did not have a Kalya Orev? So Tosfos leaves it as a question against the Aruch. How could the Aruch write the first temple didn't have it? We see from the Talmud in Tractate Moed Katan, the first temple did have it. But Tosfos in Bechoros gives an answer. Tosfos says, the Aruch says that in the first Beit HaMikdash, the ravens didn't come because it was so holy. So then what didn't Shlomo build the Kalya Orev? Tosfos answers, yeah, Shlomo didn't know it would be so holy. Shlomo built the Kalya Orev. After he saw that even without it, birds didn't dare approach the Beit HaMikdash, he took it down. That's Tosfos' answer out in Bechoros. So Tosfos Bayas leaves it as a question against the Aruch. Tosfos over there gives an answer. He says, initially they built it with it, because they didn't know if it would happen. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu, when he built the altar, he brought fire. He didn't know fire would come down from heaven. He had fire prepared to light the altar, and then a fire came down from heaven. The same thing Shlomo HaMelech built the Beit HaMikdash. He built the temple with pieces of metal to prevent the ravens from landing.
Why was it so bad that Nadab and Abihu brought fire? Moshe didn't even really
because that was Bakrivam Eish Zara, Asher Lo Tzivalem. Right.
No, and Moshe's fire wasn't an Eish Zara?
It wasn't, because it says that you should put a fire on it. The Torah says that. Okay, so now we start the 10th chapter of Shabbos. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar told, "Hamotzi masoy lemala masarat tfachim chayav." If you carry something in public domain above 10 tfachim, so 10 tfachim is about this high, okay, from the beam, from the floor, it's about this high, right? 10 hands with, yeah. So we 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So this is half, okay? Double this, so that's 10 tfachim. So, this Mishnah needs a bit of an introduction. Let's begin. What is public domain? So there are multiple types of public domain. There's public domain with regards to ownership. The street out there is public domain. It belongs to the public. It's not my street. Right? So I'm not allowed to bring boulders. If I have extra sand in my yard, if I'm going to dig out a foundation and build a new house, So what should I do with all the extra dirt? No problem, I'll dump it in the street, and then the government will come and clean it up. I'm not allowed to do that, right? So that's ownership. That belongs to the public. That's one type of public domain. Then we have public domain with regards to Shabbos. With regards to Shabbos, it's a totally different concept. It has nothing to do with ownership. It has to do with the question of, does the public go there? Do you have a large enough public that walks there? Is it broad enough? Is it wide enough? Is it open enough? If you have 2 million people, for Ashkenazim, that walk down, and it's 32 feet wide, 16 amma wide. If it runs straight from one end of town to the other end of the city, from one end to the other end, okay, so that's public domain. So in public domain, I'm not allowed to carry something 4 footsteps. That's an isur d'oraita, a biblical prohibition. Now, we shift to private domain. Again, private domain, we have monetary private domain. I own this house. That's my private domain. I own this yard. My private domain. I bought that property. That's my private domain. That's monetary. With regards to the laws of Shabbos, it has nothing to do with ownership. If you have a fenced-in area that has 4 walls, that's private domain. Whether it's owned by an individual or not is not the point. The point is you have 4 walls and you have an area of 4x4 inside. So that's it. It's private domain. So theoretically, you build yourself a small sukkah and now you have a private domain. There is an isul d'orait, a biblical prohibition of taking something out of private domain into public domain, and taking something from public domain into private domain. So I have 2 types of domains, midoraita biblically. Next point. How high does public domain go? Well, let's start with the easy one. How high does private domain go? Till the sky. Once you have 4 walls, private domain goes all the way up. So, let's say you're standing in public domain, and when I was a kid, they brought in a maggid from England, a man who told fantastic stories. So one of the stories he told us when he was talking to us about being clean people was about his roommate. His roommate didn't switch his socks. He would challenge himself a week, 2 weeks, till he took off his socks. And when he took off his socks, he would take them and throw them on the wall, and they would stick. And they would stay there for a very long time. What? Well, when you're a kid, you see, it stayed with me. It's been 3 decades. I still remember the story. So what happens if you're in public domain and you're this guy's roommate and you decide the time has come to take off my royal socks? It's Shabbos afternoon and you want to take them off. So you're not too happy with your neighbor. So as you're walking in the street, you see his house. He's got a fence around his yard. And you decide you'll give him some psalmim in honor of Shabbos. So you take off your socks and you throw them on his tree, and they stick there, and they're going to stay there for a month or two, stuck onto the tree, giving him a beautiful odor for Shabbos. So now, did it land in his private domain? No. Did it stick onto the tree in his private domain? Yes. Will it stay there for till the end of Shabbos? It's there. It might stay there for a month. But wait, it's not in the private domain. So the halacha says, the example of the Gemara is, you took a fig and you threw it at a tree, and squished onto the tree, and now it's stuck onto the tree. But I wanted an example that might stay with you. So, stick with you, yeah. So the halacha says, private domain, reshut hayachid, olal d'larakia. Once you have 4 walls that are 10 tefachim high, so then, till the heavens is private domain. If you can even toss something against the tree, against the wall, and it sticks there, that's it. It's landed in private domain, and that's an isur d'oraita. If I took it from public domain and moved it to private domain. What about public domain? Reshut harabim. How high does reshut harabim go? So the halacha says it only goes up to 10 tefachim. So in the street, up to here is reshut harabim. Above that is not reshut harabim. So let's say you're in Manhattan, and you're walking down 5th Avenue, and you suddenly realize that you walked out of the house with gum in your mouth. You suddenly realize you walked out of the house, you had a tissue in your pocket. So you suddenly realize you're carrying something in public domain. Where do you put it down? Well, We said that taking something out of private domain and taking it into public domain is an isul doraita. But that's only when you put it down in public domain. Till you stop, till you put it down, it's not an isul doraita. So what you could theoretically do is find a post in public domain, or sometimes you have these waste baskets, and if you put it there, then technically you took it out of your house, private domain, passed it through public domain, but it never landed in public domain. It landed above 10 tefachim. We said above 10 tefachim is not public domain, right? We said reshut hayachid, private domain, goes up the whole airspace to the heaven. But if you could find a light post, let's say you take the gum out of your mouth, not such a correct thing to do, right? And you stick it on the light post. Okay, not so educational. You're going to come back after Shabbos to take that off and throw it out. So on the light post, above 10 tefachim is not Rishus HaRabim. That's not public domain. So now our Mishnah deals with another question. A guy says, no problem, I want to carry my talis to shul. If I'd wear it, so I'm allowed to wear clothing in public domain. That's not called carrying. I'm going to take my talis on my shoulder. That's above 10 tefachim. So now I'm going to carry it through public domain, but it's above 10 tefachim. Don't worry, it's not in public domain. It's above public domain, right? We said public domain reaches 10 tefachim. So you're going to carry it above public domain. Does that work? Says the Mishnah, HaMotzi Masui Lemana Masarat Tefachim Chayav. If you carry something above 10 tefachim in public domain, it's a nisur doraita, he is chayav, it's a biblical prohibition. Why? Sheken masab nei kehat. The family of kehat, when they carry things, they carry them on their shoulders. And when they carried them on their shoulders, so then that means they carried things above 10 tefachim. Umasab nei kehat minalan. How do you know that the family of kehat carried things above 10 tefachim? Dichtiv. Ala mishkan vala mizbeach saviv. Makish mizbeach lemishkan, ma mishkan eser amot, av mizbeach eser amot. The pasuk compares the mizbeach to the mishkan. So it's telling us that. Okay, this is a long explanation, but it's telling us that the mishkan. Okay, to explain this is going to be convoluted. I'm going to explain it incorrectly. I'm just going to say how we would read the Mishnah literally. The Gemara in Tractate Zavachim works out a different calculation here. But we're going to assume that what the Mishnah means is that the Mizbeach was 10 amos tall, just like the Mishkan was 10 amos tall. Umishkan gufei minalan, how do you know the Mishkan was 10 amos tall? Dichtiv, the pasuk says, Eser amot o hakarish, every beam of the Mishkan was 10 amos tall. So how tall is that, guys? How tall is 10 amos?
30 feet.
How high is this ceiling?
15.
6, 7, 8. I would give this ceiling a little over 8 feet. Okay, so that means it's like 3 times this ceiling, right? About 3 times this, the height of this wall. That's the height of each beam, 10 amos. 10 amos. Each amma is almost 2 feet, so that's about 20 feet. So a little under 3 times this height. Okay, 2.5 times the height of the ceiling. Uchtiv, the pasuk says, "Vayfros to lel mishkan ve'amar Rav." Rav taught Moshe Rabbeinu praso. Moshe Rabbeinu spreads out the curtains over the Mishkan. How did he do that? Mikan talamid, govan sheleviyim eseramot. So then the Levites must have been very tall also. They must have been about 10 amas high, just like Moshe. Ugmiri d'choltuna demidle b'motot, tilta mile'el, utrei tilta mile'tat. When you're carrying something on poles, so the responsible way to do it is to have 1/3 of the weight above the pole and 2/3 beneath the pole. Because if you don't divide the weight that way, then your center of gravity is too high and it becomes harder to carry. So when you carry things on a pole, the way you want to do it is divide the center of gravity, that one third is above and two thirds are below the pole. So then you see, if the Levites were 10 amos tall and they're carrying on their shoulder beams that are 10 amos tall, one third is above their shoulder, two thirds are beneath, then you end up with how many amos in the air? 3 1/3. So it's well above the 10 tefachim, right? So they're carrying it very high in the air. From here we see, if you carry something in the air, in public domain, above 10 tefachim, you're chayiv. This is relevant to us. Where you come from? What Holland. Country? Holland. You guys have public domain in Holland? I don't know.
It's
a good question. It depends a little bit on how the ground goes, because sometimes the beach goes this way into the water.
So what does it make a difference?
Well, then why would the water make a wall? We sometimes say that if you have a jagged cliff, that constitutes a wall. In the United States, you definitely have it. In Brooklyn,
in Amsterdam,
how many people? Again, 2 million, but you have other opinions, right?
Also. Right, let's say 600,000. Let's not say 2 million.
On one road a day?
On the dump?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, not many play, only maybe in Amsterdam.
Yeah, in front of the central station in Amsterdam.
Okay.
I'm saying, in Manhattan, you have the train carrying millions of people each day, the subway system.
You have several rocket pads over there, several.
Okay.
And then the buses, and then the public,
maybe the
ordinary cars
don't count, right?
Rav Moshe Feinstein held they do. Rav Menashe Klein argued that point. He said each car should be its own private domain. Four walls, you have 4x4, should be private domain. Others say we should prove it from the Aron, because again, the Aron was a total of 10 tefachim. The Aron was also this high, and they carried a third above their shoulder and two thirds beneath. Okay, we move forward. En Ashkina Shora, Hashem's. I have many. Yes, Eitan. No, that's what the Mishnah said. It's Isur Doraita. It's biblically prohibited to carry above 10 tefachim in Rishut HaRabim. Even though technically Rishut HaRabim only reaches 10 tefachim, it's still Asur to carry above. Even if you carry it above your shoulders, it's Asur. Yeah. En Ashkina Shora, Ela Al Chacham Gibo V'Ashir Uval Koma. We have a rule. Hashem's presence doesn't settle on a person. He will not have the Shechina unless, number one, he is Chacham, he is a wise man. Number two, he is Gibor. What's a Gibor?
Very strong.
Okay, powerful. Ashir, what is Ashir?
Wealthy.
Wealthy. Baal Koma, what does Baal Koma mean?
Tall.
Right.
His good position.
So... We have a very famous machloket here, what this means. Simply read, means you got to be smart, you got to be powerful, you have to be wealthy, you have to be tall, in order for Hashem to settle on you. But there's the Rambam, and the Rambam says none of this should be taken literally. Gibor means Ezu Gibora Koveshet Yitzro. He's mighty and he is conquering of his. Okay.
Okay, there's a Shir and there's that, but I'm saying, what do you mean by Baal Koma?
He's a good position.
Okay. It's a good question.
The same thing's about a prophet, right? About his.
Right. So I don't remember if the Rambam discusses Baal Koma. I have to look it up. I don't remember. but Ashir, the Rambam says, Ezu Ashir Asamech Bechelko. And the Ran famously disagrees. We learned the Ran in Toshot Ran. He says they're all to be taken literally. You got to be wealthy in order to be a prophet. That's
he was wealthy in Turk Gavol.
It says, yeah.
The one who is wealthy, the one who is satisfied with his portion.
Right, but this Gemara is quoted a little differently in Nidarim. And when the Gemara in Nidarim quotes it, the Gemara says, you see, you have to be wealthy because Yonavin Amitai, who was a prophet, paid for the whole ship. When he wanted to take the ship, there weren't enough people. He said, I'll pay for as many passengers as you're missing. That's why the Rambam does not want to take it literally. The Ran, well, the Gemara doesn't read like the Rambam. The Gemara's examples are Moshe was tall, he was able to handle the whole Mishkan, so he was very tall.
The idea that tall people can have a problem with, the idea that if somebody is so great but they're not tall, they're out. I guess so. Listen,
we don't call the shots. Hey, you're taller than me. You're in good shape. Say that.
Jacob's going to be the next prophet.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Yeah. Cool. When he says he has to be rich, that doesn't mean physically rich. It means like physically worry-free.
Two opinions. Again, the Ran and the literal reading of the Gemara is wealthy. That's what the Gemara seems like it's saying. Wealthy means he has money. I don't think he has to be that wealthy. I don't think so. I don't know that wealthy people are less worried about their pranasa. Why do you think that?
Okay,
what?
Elisha doesn't seem like he was so wealthy.
I don't know.
Didn't you tell me once that's why they emphasized why he was, why he shepherded his cows that he was using to plow the field when Eliyahu came? Because he used the last thing he had to be accepted as an apprentice or as a student by Eliyahu?
I don't remember that. I remember it a little differently. I think it's the Radak over there, but I remember it differently. Let's look it up. I think it says over there that he became wealthy, that once he became a Navi, he did become wealthy. But coming back to here, so because the Gemara mentioned that Moshe Rabbeinu spread out the tent over the Mishkan, so it brings up this topic that a prophet or someone who has the Shekhinah has to be also tall. Okay. Next point. We said we're not allowed to take things from private domain to public domain. So it says, "Amotzi beima chayav ve'of lirshut rabim." If someone takes out a domesticated animal, a wild animal, a bird, into public domain, ben chayin, it could be his pigeon, his parrot, it's alive. Ben shchutin, could be it's slaughtered, so he took him to public domain. His chicken, yeah, chayav. So that's considered that he took out something from private domain to public domain, he's chayav. Rabbi Natan omer al shchutin chayav. Rabbi Natan says, if you took out chicken, you're chayav, because you took out food. Al chayin patur, but if you took out a live bird into public domain, then it's not considered that you carried something into public domain. Here we have a phenomenal concept called shehachai noseh et atzmo. Living things carry themselves. If you guys ever had opportunity to do this wonderful mitzvah of carrying a body to be buried, so you should make sure to get this mitzvah whenever you go to funerals. So in Israel at least, they give you the opportunity to be one of the people that carry the stretcher. And that's one of the greatest mitzvot, to carry the stretcher, because it's a mitzvah that you know no one's paying you back for, right? The deceased isn't coming back to say thank you, buddy. It's called chesed shelemet, kindness that has truth to it. Every other kindness we do has an element of our own interest in it. But carrying the deceased to be buried, that's chesed shel emet. And that's why traditionally, for the last three millennium, whenever there's a funeral, Jews are vying for that mitzvah. Let me carry the stretcher. Let me carry the stretcher. Because it's a wonderful mitzvah. It's a mitzvah that you know no one's paying you for. So, if you ever have that opportunity, you'll notice that the deceased weighs much more than the living body. And this is the concept that we say, Hachai noseh et atzmo. Someone who's living, the life that's in him makes it that he's carrying himself. So Rabbi Natan says, if you carry out a live bird, it wasn't only you who was carrying the bird, it was the life in the bird that was carrying it. Amarava filu temer rabanan atkanu pligi rabanan leid rabanan ele bivim achaya ve'of dimi shar biti nafshayu aval adam chay noset atzmo filu rabanan modu. Rava says, the rabbis agree that when it comes to a human being, it's considered that he carries himself. But when it comes to an animal, animals and birds, when they're annoyed at you that you're carrying them, they put down their full body weight on you. They want to make sure you don't move them.
Like little kids.
So that's why the rabbis don't agree with Rabbi Natan. They say when you take out an animal, you lift the animal doesn't support you. It's not like a human being. The rabbis agree with regards to a human, chay noseh et atzmo. Now, this halacha has other ramifications. Let's take one interesting ramification. There are animals that have birds that ride on them. You guys familiar with this? There's a rhinoceros that has a specific bird that keeps riding on its head.
Right.
Yeah.
Like eating the insects off of it.
So different animals have relationships with different birds, that the birds frequent them and they ride on them. We know that one of the things that we're prohibited from doing on Shabbos is called mechamer, to cause the animal to work on Shabbos. So if you put your books on the back of a donkey and you say to the donkey, oh, go on. So you had the donkey move, so then that donkey carried something for you. That's an Isur D'oraita. On Shabbos it says, you have to let your animals rest. You're not supposed to make them work on your behalf. So even if they're carrying something on their back, that's an Isur D'oraita that's prohibited. So what happens if you ask your donkey to move and it has this bird on its head? Is that considered the donkey carried the bird? Well, we just saw that sometimes other creatures are called chay noseh etatzmo, according to Rabbi Natan, and according to the rabbis, it isn't. Where this comes up also is, are you allowed to sell an animal to a non-Jew on a weekday? So the rabbi said, don't, because you're going to end up selling it to him Friday afternoon also. And then when you sell it to him, you'll end up the sale a minute before Shabbos, and then when Shabbos comes, you'll tell him, okay, you can take the animal. And when the animal doesn't budge, you'll walk over and tell the animal, no, go with him, he's your new master. And you're going to get the animal to move on Shabbos, and sometimes carry things on Shabbos. So the rabbi said, we don't want you selling your animals to non-Jews, because you're going to end up doing it Friday afternoon getting your animal.
By a small technicality, by a minority.
That's a good question. When you learn the Mishnah in Avodah Zarah, you'll come back to me and explain to me why.
Which Mishnah?
In Avodah Zarah. It's a Mishnah in Avodah Zarah. Coming back. There's always deeper stuff. But for now, what's relevant to us is this idea of chay noseh et atzmo. When do I say a living creature carries itself? So the rabbis agree that when it's a human, he's carrying himself. When it's an animal, we have this machloket. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan adds, Umodeh Rabbi Natan bekafut. Rabbi Natan agrees that when you have someone tied up or you have an animal tied up and you carry it, so then you're carrying it. We don't say chay noseh et atzmo. If you have an animal tied up, I don't know what he'd say in a cage. Is that called tied up? Let's see. Amale.
I didn't get that last part. If an animal becomes not kosher, you're supposed to sell it to a certain animal, to a non-Jew, right? I mean, it's from trade or something.
Again?
I maybe missed something. He said, you're not supposed to sell animals, period. Because seemingly, they always say, you know, if something becomes not kosher,
That's a slaughtered animal. We're talking about a live animal. Yeah. Okay. 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 So we have to pick up over here. We began the 10th chapter today, and Be'ez Hashem, next week we will finish the 10th chapter. Very short, very little Agatha in the 10th chapter. And we will pick up here, Be'ez Hashem, next week, this discussion of whether carrying a person that's tied up, a person, an animal, do we still say, Chai nose et atzmo? Let's see. I want to just do Tosas here. Tosas asks, what's the logic of Chai nose et atzmo? Is it that when a person's alive, it's lighter to carry them? What difference does it make that it's lighter to carry them? We're obligated if we carry something into public domain, even if it's something light. You know, if you carry a quarter into public domain, that's usher. It doesn't matter that it's light. If the logic is that I didn't do the task alone, I carried him and he carried himself. So over here, we would say, being that you could carry him without his help, so that's considered like you did it on your own. So then what's the logic here? So the Ri says, we learn it out from the Mishkan, that whenever they'd bring animals, the animals would walk on their own 2 feet. You didn't carry them. So if you carry an animal, so then you have a unique case that didn't exist in the Mishkan. That's why he's patur. Tosa says, what about the Chilazon? Tosa says, the Chilazon, they would wound right away, so that they could use its dye. So from Tosos, it sounds like they were hunting chilazon in the desert, because the Gemara will say later on that part of the usage of a chilazon to make the blue dye for the Mishkan and for the tzitzis is that you want it to stay alive as long as possible when you're taking out the dye, the blood from the chilazon, because then it gives you a much better color. As much as you can get out without its dying is better. Tosva sounds like they were actually hunting chilazon, and they were taking out its blood in the desert. The fact that they were hunting chilazon, so that we'll see later on. It says they made nets, longer or shorter, so that's clear in the Gemara. But it sounds here like they were literally pulling out the chilazon and making the dye. I would have thought maybe they sent people to some islands, to some, I don't know, where were they hunting chilazon from in the desert? I'm saying.
Doesn't God promise it's supposed to be on the beach from the Nakhala of.
Right, but where were they getting it from?
Was it
in the desert, they needed chilazon. In the desert, they needed blue dye.
Sent the delegation somewhere to get it.
Okay, so you're saying they sent the delegation somewhere. Okay, maybe.
I mean, weren't they buying stuff?